Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with some foreign policy issues that have been overshadowed by the economic hostage crisis on Capitol Hill. Ambassador Mark Ginsburg joins us to talk about Iran's role in shoring up the murderous Assad clan in Syria with both money and Iranian Revolutionary Guard thugs who have honed their skills beating, jailing and murdering Iranian protesters during the Green Revolution. Then we will speak with an Israeli Air Force veteran, Brigadier General Nehemia Dagan, who is currently touring the United States, sponsored by J Street, the dovish alternative to AIPAC, promoting a two-state solution. We will discuss the absence of peace and even a peace process between the Israelis and Palestinians and what can be done to bring the parties back to the table. Then, given the high stakes in the current economic hostage crisis brought on by those who created the deficit that all except the wealthiest Americans are expected to pay down at the cost of killing economic recovery, we will get an update on the latest insanity on Capitol Hill. Thomas Ferguson, professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts and a member of the advisory board of the Institute for New Economic Thinking, joins us. I'm now joined by Ambassador Mark Ginsburg, who is a former presidential advisor and United States ambassador to Morocco. He served as a legislative assistant to Senator Edward Kennedy, special assistant to the Secretary of State, deputy senior advisor to the President for Middle East Policy, and senior U.S. coordinator for Mediterranean Trade, Investment, and Security Affairs. He serves as a special advisor to the Department of Defense Special Operations Command and an advisor to the United States Department of State on outreach initiatives to the Muslim world. He has an article out in the Huffington Post called Iran's Proxy War with Syria is Shoring Up Assad. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ambassador Ginsburg.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
And Ambassador, you wrote about, of course, the revolutionary anthem in your Huffington Post piece, Iran's Proxy War with Syria Shoring Up Assad. You wrote about the revolutionary anthem, Come On, Bashar, Leave. Well, since you've written that, of course, the songwriter, his body was found floating in the river with his throat cut out.
Yes, indeed. Another example of the treachery and murderous mentality of the Assad regime against its own people.
And I understand that in many ways the key to stopping it, since Iran and Hezbollah are helping, would be if the Syrian army cracked up. And at this point, it looks like Maher Assad, the psychotic younger brother of Bashar al-Assad, he controls the Republican Guards and the 5th Division. And I understand the army is essentially locked down in its barracks, and it can't leave unless an Alawite officer basically approves it. So you have this Alawite clan controlling the military, but it's majority Sunni. Is there any evidence that you can see that the army will crack?
It's a little hard for any of us to know that, given the news blackout that has been posed by the Syrian government. There is, obviously, for our listeners, the divisions within the Syrian army are sectarian, as they are in many of these countries. The officer corps is controlled by these minority Alawites, which are part of the tribal regime mechanism, and majority of the conscripts are Sunni. There have been incidences during the last 4 months where conscripts have defected to or have refused to fire on protesters, which is one of the reasons why Syria has turned to Iran to bring in its collective goon squads of riot police to basically substitute, or as well as to provide logistical support to the commanders who are Alawite.
So, and Iran is not just supplying its thugs in the form of both the Law Enforcement Service, the LED, or the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, which are the de facto rulers of Iran. Also the besieged militias. They were the people, they were the sort of strike breakers and thugs who beat up the protesters in the Green Revolution.
Yeah, indeed. In fact, we have information from different intelligence sources that there's at least two battalions, if you can call them battalions, of besiege. This is spelled B-A-S-I-J. These are the civilian-clad thugs that are the riot control operatives that were used by the Khomeini government against the rioters after the elections in in Iran, and they've now brought in these battalions into the major cities in Syria to go after the protesters as well as their families.
Again, I'm speaking with Ambassador Mark Ginsburg, who has an article out in the Huffington Post called Iran's Proxy War in Syria is Shoring Up Assad. So given the clear stake that Iran feels it has in this, and by extension Hezbollah, since they are a surrogate of Iran, I'm astounded that the West, including the United States, isn't more involved in recognizing that they surely know who the bad guys are in the neighborhood. And why would they then allow the really bad guys to prop up this hideous regime and not in any way want to see it go down?
The Obama administration has been playing a bad version of Syrian two-step diplomatically with the regime, and I fault Secretary Clinton on this. She has consistently sent the wrong message to Assad that he was indispensable and that she was looking for some negotiated settlement while the violence and the escalation of murders continued. Now, after the U.S. Embassy was attacked last week, her rhetoric changed and she declared Assad to be illegitimate, and yet at the same time, the United States has not gone as far as it could to impose sanctions against the oil exports of Syria, on which the government is totally dependent for its foreign currency at this point, in addition to Iranian infusions of support. And secondly, to get the European Union to stop buying oil from Syria. That includes Germany, Poland, the Netherlands, and I believe Italy. Now, how many more body counts must this administration have before it takes the next steps that all of us know it could be taking, and yet for some reason it is not? Best speculation I have is that the administration is completely tied itself up in knots, trying to figure out whether it can do anything to take Assad out of power without appearing to the media as involving itself in another conflict in the Middle East without having any ability to influence events.
Well, to some extent, you know, because Assad and his clan by extension the Iranians blame everything that's happening in Syria on the Israelis and the Americans, it's probably wise not to have any fingerprints. But the very fact that the American ambassador there recently went to Hama and was in the demonstrations, his presence there probably saved thousands of lives. So,
indeed. Robert Ford is a very talented ambassador, and I have enormous respect for him as a career Foreign Service officer. And yet at the same time, he is reporting back to a administration that doesn't quite have its act together on policy towards Syria. And that's the real problem here. I think Americans should be genuinely perplexed on why my friends in the Obama administration are having such a difficult time calling Assad out, given the fact that so many more Syrians, courageous Syrians, have defied the gunfire in the streets of Syria's cities, and yet the best the administration can offer is an occasional trotting out of a statement declaring resentment and anger over these killings.
Well, already, as you probably know, Ambassador Ginsburg, the Australian Foreign Minister, has called on the International Criminal Court to indict the Assads.
Well, of course, and indeed, I recognize that a UN Security Council would probably never agree to that, given Russian and Chinese opposition to doing anything against Assad. But the fact of the matter is that moral persuasion is as important as actual persuasion in the Security Council. I think that most people who look at this objectively would be questioning why the United States is not doing more against the regime. And those of us who have studied Syria and have genuinely asked our friends in the administration, why aren't you doing more? There's more you can do. The best answer we get is that they hope that somehow or other the new reformed transitional authority, which is the opposition, would somehow coalesce around a negotiated settlement with the regime. Well, listen, let's be real here. The Assad regime is not about to give up power to anybody, and we're whistling past the graveyard if we think that somehow or other that's going to change because the United States would like to see something that in Syria that didn't happen in Libya.
And meanwhile, these incredibly courageous Syrians demonstrate, and presumably on Friday again, they will take to the streets, risk their lives, those that are killed, then their families, when they attend their funerals, they're likely to be shot by Maher Assad's thugs and the Iranians now who are helping out. I mean, it's extraordinary, Ambassador Ginsburg, because, for example, right next door, a country that has a lot of influence, Turkey. I understand the Turkish Prime Minister is disgusted with the Assads, and he's cut bait with them.
Absolutely. He visited, this is Davutoğlu, the foreign minister of Turkey. Turkey really made a real effort to reverse its bad relations with Syria when Prime Minister Erdogan's party came to power in Turkey. And the foreign minister visited Assad 19 times. Well, they did everything they could to try to have some influence on Syria. Turkey has enormously expansive influence in the Middle East, and now they're totally disgusted. Well, what again does the Obama administration need but another example of a former friend of Syria, such as Turkey, turning against the regime and the administration still sitting on its hands and keeping its mouth relatively closed about the events in Syria?
Well,
now, by the way, I'm not condoning the idea of the U.S. being involved militarily in Syria.
But there's so many steps that can be taken short of that. That's the part that I'm mystified. And you've pointed out in your article in the Huffington Post, Ambassador Mark Ginsburg, that the Iranians have pumped in $5.6 billion to shore up Syria because the Syrian banks, their depositors, are seeking havens in Beirut and Istanbul. So already there's a capital flight out of Syria. We know that, for example, during the Balkan War, when Milosevic stole the treasury and parked it in Cyprus, there was a lot of efforts. There are a lot of tools in the U.S. toolbox in terms of going after finances. So they did it
part of the problem here is the problem that, of course, the administration reacts on its foreign policy in the Middle East on a 24/7 news cycle. And because there are no bloody photos coming out of Syria, such as the terrible atrocity that was committed in this funeral in Homs the other day, where the security forces killed the mother and son of the protester who was being buried, point blank. And if that had been put or caught on television, I guarantee you there would be a huge outcry in this country among some of the anchors of our media outlets, which would have caused the administration to react. Well, in the absence of these photos, the administration basically feels more or less that it can hide behind what is a losing policy because it doesn't have to step out any further.
But my understanding,
it doesn't make a lot of sense, frankly.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, but my understanding is that looking at the other side of the coin and what is the glue that holds this disgusting regime together in power in that country is the fear of sectarian violence, which is the card that the Assads play all the time. But if you've got this population, and clearly they saw what happened next door in Iraq, they don't want Syria to end up that way. So this would seem to be the time where you target those people and you let them know that you're on their side and that Syria can hold together and can be a so much better place without this family of thugs who think it's their divine right to rule this country.
Listen, it's been conventional wisdom by people who don't know Syria, including people in the Obama administration, that to push Assad aside would create the very sectarian strife that the administration claims they're trying to avoid. And yet, it's really the exact reverse. The longer the regime is able to stay in power, the longer the protesters protest, the more likely the administration is going to trigger sectarian strife because there's growing resentment among the Sunni majority populations at the atrocities that the Alawites are committing against them. So the administration has it completely backwards.
So, but this is also an administration that is doing everything it can to find ways to bring about sanctions against Iran. So,
agreed. And as I said, the irony of it all is that there's as I said, it's been an erratic, inconsistent policy. And when you try to get a straight answer out of the administration on what exactly is it trying to pursue, it sort of pivots left and right without knowing exactly what it is. Its fallback position is, we don't want to do anything to inflame the situation any further that could create more sectarian strife. That's the default position. The default position is from its inception incorrect, given the events that are unfolding now. So the administration is caught holding on to a policy that is actually shopworn and overtaken by events.
But I thought the subtext of our policy in Iran was, and perhaps it's chimeric, but the subtext is that hopefully one of these days the Iranian people are going to rise up against this unpopular Islamo-fascist clique that runs the place, and that all of those people that showed up in the streets that were beaten up by the besieged, they've been described as the embers that are underneath, that are burning beneath the ashes. So that's the only way that Iran's ever going to be free. The people have to do it themselves. So you would think that anything to diminish the influence of the IRGC, and if they're acting in desperation to hold up the Assad's, we should be doing everything we can to thwart them.
Well, I agreed, and I just I keep thinking of words that to describe my feelings on this, and I guess the only way I can summarize the attitude of the Obama administration in Syria is that it's addicted to the devil it knows.
Well, I guess that explains our tardiness with Mubarak in Egypt, but we, finally made the right decision there.
Yes, and as I said, I think part of the problem here also is that the administration is bereft of people who truly know the Arab world and understand the Middle East very well. It's very, very weak along the lines. And not that Syria has been a country that everyone has understood, but it's been part of the same problem that we face. We're sort of used to dealing with the dictatorship. We didn't really spend a lot of time figuring out what the country was all about.
Yeah, and then the Arab Spring caught us by surprise.
Yes.
Well, I thank you for joining us, Ambassador Ginsburg.
Sure. Pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Ambassador Mark Ginsburg, who's a former presidential advisor and United States ambassador to Morocco. He served as a legislative assistant to Senator Edward Kennedy, special assistant to the Secretary of State, deputy senior advisor to the President for Middle East Policy, and special U.S. coordinator for the Mediterranean Trade, Investment, and Security Affairs. He serves as a special advisor to the Department of Defense Special Operations Command and an advisor to the United States Department of State on outreach initiatives to the Muslim world. He has an article out in the Huffington Post called Iran's Proxy War in Syria is Shoring Up Assad. Let's take a brief station break, and we're back joined by an Israeli general.
يلا ارحل يا بشار